Hey everybody, I'm Joanna and I am an alcoholic. I'm supposed to say what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. My sobriety date is August the 18th, 2006. There was some intervention by my creator just a couple of nights before that, and I was pulled over for what would have been my fourth DUI in lifetime. I had actually been to jail, I think, a total of 8 times. And, you know, I don't talk as much about prior to AA as I used to, but there were drugs that were part of my story, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, a lot of things that I didn't grow up wanting to be, and doing things that are an asset to me today because I've been able to share my experience, strength, and hope with other women and men. However, I never intended on doing those things, but I did do them under the influence of alcohol. And but I grew up I was born in Macon and we moved to Greensboro, Georgia. I learned in AA, my father was what is referred to as a binge drinker. I don't remember a lot of my childhood when my parents were married. I think based on what my brother tells me, there was a lot of fighting, throwing furniture across the room, a lot of spankings with the belt, and you know, I grew up where you didn't talk about dad's alcoholism. There was infidelity, and I spent a lot of time in a walk-in closet that I had in my bedroom playing with my baby dolls, and I had a little dollhouse in there and things like that. I tried some hypnotherapy when I was 25, and the hypnotherapist said to my counselor that I wasn't ready for that. I've been praying about that, and I've been introduced by a lady in the fellowship to an acupuncture doctor who also has a master's degree in hypnotherapy. And when the timing is right, when God's timing is right, I probably will go through some hypnotherapy. I have sought help outside the rooms with medication 2 or 3 times in my recovery, as well as counseling. And it has helped me. It's helped me to walk through some issues that affect me today. I'm very grateful for this program. This program is a design for living, and it has set me free to be the woman that God intended for me to be. I got to thinking about, you know, exactly what I wanted to talk about. And for me, what's really, really important to me today is spirituality and the spiritual experiences that I've had in recovery. Had one last week, and I'll touch on that in just a little bit, but I do believe that night that I was pulled over in 2016, I came into the rooms not knowing I was an alcoholic. The last 5 to 7 years of my drinking, I was no longer drinking socially. I was drinking shots of Jägermeister and chasing it with beer. The majority, just about every night that I would drink, I would not remember driving home, would not remember half of the evening, would not remember what I had done or who I had done it with or what I had said, phone calls I had made, any of that. And so I came into the rooms not knowing I was an alcoholic. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I did not drink in the morning. I didn't go through delirium tremors. I didn't go to detox. But everything else, I qualify as being an alcoholic. When I would have an important event the next day, knowing that the owners of my company were going to be there, I was going to be teaching some training class on products that I represented, and I was only going to go out and have one drink. The problem is I couldn't stop at one drink. So 2 o'clock in the morning would roll around and I'd be driving home in a blackout, getting up at 5 in the morning, going to meet the owner of my company to teach a bunch of my customers about the products that I represented. Still reeking of alcohol, but my intention was to only have one drink. And it talks about that on page XXVIII. And that was the first thing that I read when it is after we have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and we drink again. And this is repeated over and over and over and over. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Well, when I read that paragraph, I thought, well, I do this every day. I'm driving to work and I say, I'm not going to drink tonight. I took the hamburger meat out of the refrigerator. I'm going to cook that meatloaf. I put the laundry basket, the dirty clothes, right in the middle of the walkway so that I would wash the clothes when I got home after work. But the problem is I never made it home, because as soon as I turned off on the exit that I live on, I stopped at that same bar that I'd been at the night before. And I did it over and over. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Well, I didn't know what phenomenon of craving meant in that paragraph. I didn't know what psychic change meant in that paragraph. But when I read that paragraph after my first beginner's meeting that night, it was suggested to me that I read the doctor's opinion in the chapter More About Alcoholism. When I read those two chapters, I realized in the privacy of my own home in my bedroom that I'm an alcoholic. And the people in that beginner's meeting knew I didn't know I was an alcoholic, and that nobody told me I was an alcoholic. But those chapters revealed to me that I'm an alcoholic. And since I've been in AA, I've met people that are 16, 17, 18 years old that are alcoholics. I've met people that are 45 years old that didn't start drinking till their children went to college, and they only drank boxed wine for 2 years and played tennis every day, that are alcoholics. I met people like my idea of what an alcoholic would be, that stood on the street corner and slept under a bridge and wore a trench coat and drank their alcohol out of a brown paper sack. Alcoholism doesn't discriminate. And these are the things that I did not know when I came into AA, but these are the things that I learned, and the friends that I have today, we are people that would not mix. You people are my peeps. You people have taught me about the disease of alcoholism. You've done a lot of the things that I've done, and you've done a lot of things that I will do if I forget that I'm an alcoholic, and I forget to enlarge my spiritual growth. I have a lot of yets, and the acronym for yet is you're eligible too. I am eligible. There's a lot of things. You know, there's a gentleman in this meeting, and he suggested that I do a 12th step call down at Kennerstone Hospital one time. And this was a lady that we got sober together, and I went down to visit her, and I said, I saw bandages around her arms, and I didn't know why she was in the hospital. I had heard that she was out, and we went walking around the floor, and I said, well, why are you here? And she said, I have a blood infection. And she went on to tell me what happened. And it started out, she started going to less meetings, stopped enlarging her spiritual growth, and eventually began shooting dope. And I said, but we've known each other for years. You had never shot dope before. She didn't start out shooting dope. She started out drinking, started taking pills, and then started shooting dope. She's back in the rooms again, and I'm so grateful to see her. I'm so grateful that she is sober today and able to share her experience, strength, and hope with other people. Another experience that I had on a 12-step call when I had 90 days sober, it was a friend of mine, and she called and asked for me in a meeting and said she was ready to go to treatment. And I went over to see her, and I was 90 days sober, and I'm looking around the apartment, and all I see is beer cans. And I look at her, and I said, where's the drugs? Where's the liquor? She said, it's just beer. Well, I didn't know that you could get to that state with beer. You know, now, of course, every countertop surface was covered with a sea of beer cans, but I didn't know that you could get in that condition on beer, you know. But I know those things today. And you know what the blessing of that event was? I was 90 days sober. It put the fear of alcohol in me. It scared me to death. And so what I'd like to talk about is some of the spiritual experiences that I've had in AA. And the very first one was that night in jail. And I was in Dawsonville jail, and I got down on my knees and I prayed and I said, God, help me. I was 42, and I said, I'm too old to be going down this road again. And God showed me about a 10-minute window, a movie of my life. And there were a lot of good times. I didn't always get in trouble. There were a lot of good times. But he showed me the bad times. He showed me the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. He showed me the lost jobs. He showed me the lost relationships, dropping out of high school, never going to college, never getting married, never having children, my home being in a foreclosure status when I came into the room, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of financial debt, a 400 and something credit score when I came into the rooms. That's what he showed me. And what the next words that came out of my mouth was, "Oh my God, I've got to quit drinking." Now see, I still didn't know I was an alcoholic. And then where it talks about attraction, not promotion, there was a male friend of mine that had been inviting me to my Monday night home group for about 3 years. And he just told me how his life had changed. And for 3 years, he invited me. And sometimes he even met me at a little neighborhood bar. And he'd talk about everything he had learned since he'd been in AA. And he told me he loved me. He never called me an alcoholic. He just told me he loved me. And he told me the design for living that was in this program. And so when I got that DUI, the next day I called him. And he said, "You want to go to that Monday night meeting with me?" And I came. And someone bought me a big book. Went to the beginner's meeting, somebody bought me a big book, and I read those two chapters, the chapter more about alcoholism and the doctor's opinion. And it's in the pages of the big book that was revealed to me, to my innermost self, that I was an alcoholic. And the people invited me back. They said, "You're going to be here tomorrow night." And I continued to come. And I'm grateful for meetings like the Breakfast Club and Sober at 6 and the 8 p.m. meetings. I'm grateful for the Howe Place and the board and the people that have provided such a wonderful place like this for us to get sober, to have meetings 6-7 times a day in. Because when I got sober for 3 years, I was here every night for 2-3 meetings a night, because that's when I did my drinking after work. So that was my first spiritual experience. When I had a year and a half sober, my mom died. But prior to her dying, those last couple of months, I was able to be of service to my mother. I was able to clean her and care for her. And I was able to watch her experience the ultimate spiritual experience. And then when she took her final breath, I realized that I was looking at a vessel that had physically died. But the spirit of my mother, the love and compassion and forgiveness and work ethic and the things that my mother taught me, that was no longer in that vessel anymore. And I was able to tell her how much I loved her. The final words she said to me, because we know there's a lot of people in the rooms experiencing this right now, is, "Please don't drink, honey." She said this about 20 minutes before she died. She said, "I will always be with you." She said, "Call upon me and I will be there. I'm as close as the air that you breathe." And she put her hand over my heart. And she is. She's with me every day of my life. 10 months later, I went to visit my father in the hospital. And I witnessed him as I was, when I got into the room, I felt the presence of something in the room. And at this time, I had not started going to church. You know, God was the group. Good orderly direction, group of drunks. I prayed the third step, seventh step, and 11th step prayer every day. But I was struggling with the God concept, and my first sponsor was very loving, and she did what it talks about in the big book. And she said, "Just believe, do you believe that we believe?" I said, "Oh, I know you people believe." She said, "Just believe that they believe." I said, "I can do that." And so I witnessed my father reaching into the sky and smiling as we were talking. And I didn't ask my father the questions that I asked my mother those last few days of her life, but I witnessed my mother doing the same thing, and my mother said that the loved ones that had crossed over were there with her. So we found out the next day that they were getting ready to tell the family on Monday that my father had less than a month to live, that he was ate up with cancer. I drove back home and I called my brother and I said, "John, please, I'm only going to ask you once, but please come with me to visit Dad tomorrow." He said, "I will." I picked him up at 9 a.m. We went to Athens, Georgia to visit my dad for the final day of his life. And the last thing that my father said to my brother as he shook his hand was, "Son, I'm proud of you. You were the father that I never was. You're a good husband and a good father, and I love you." Those were the last words that my brother needed to hear from our dad that was not part of our lives. You know, he died with 32 years of sobriety. He followed a different path. There are more than one path to recovery, and my daddy followed a religious path, and he died with 32 years of sobriety. But I was able to witness these things. Since that time, you know, I've gone through some challenging times. I've been unemployed twice since 2008, since the recession here in Atlanta. My heart's been broken. My home was in a foreclosure status when I came into the program. I qualified for a government program which saved my home. I started college with a GED and a 10th grade high school dropout. I started Kennesaw State University. I have a 3.4 GPA. There's been 2 years of the 6 years that I've been with the company that I'm currently with that, you know, I've been very successful in those two out of those 6 years. I've been able to have meetings with HR and say things that most people in a company would not say. But it has implemented changes within the company. Would I recommend it to other people? No. You know, it's hard. But I had a holy man come up to me last week on the job, and he asked if he could speak to me. And he stepped outside of the office of where I was visiting, and he said, God knows everything you're going through right now. He vividly described the last 8 months of my employment, actually the last 3 or 4 years of my employment, vivid details of my employment. And he said, God knows everything that you're going through, and he loves you. He knows you're a woman of integrity. He knows you have a strong work ethic, that you're honest, and you're standing up for what's right. And no matter what happens with this job, he is there with you. Now, I guess some people might call those kind of things coincidences. I don't. I'd never seen this man before. He had no earthly idea that I was a vendor. He had no earthly idea why I was in that property office. But he spoke the words that God had put on his heart to speak to me. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that my Creator put him in my path to tell me what I needed to hear. And I had another meeting with HR this week, and I was with probably about 10 people between conference calls and the people in that meeting, and I was able to talk about the experiences that I've gone through in the last 4 years with the company. And I was able to break my anonymity and explain that nothing was worth my sobriety, my serenity, or my health, and that I'm prepared to go to work at Burger King and do whatever I have to do to preserve those things. And all I did, like my sponsor says, is I stated the facts. I just stated the facts. But like I said, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that because it's a difficult situation to be in. But I want to read just a couple of things that, and I'm cheating here, you guys. This is a wonderful little book, the Little Big Book Quote Book. And this morning, I flipped through here to just try to read a couple of things on spiritual experiences. Page 25, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. And that's page 25. Page 27, yes, replied the doctor, there is exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here in these in occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men and suddenly cast to one side, and our completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Page 35. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Page 44. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit drinking entirely, and if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Page 64. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And I'm reading these things because these are promises. These are things that have come true in my life. Are they 100%? Am I all this stuff all the time? No. Ask my roommates. They're in the program. They'll they'll be honest with you. You know, no, I'm not like this all the time, but I do have a design for living today, and I try to the best of my ability to practice the principles of the program. From page 75, once we had taken this step, speaking about step 5, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Page 83, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Page 131, 132, alcoholics who have derided religious people will be helped by such contacts. Being possessed by a spiritual experience, the alcoholic will find he has much in common with these people, though he may differ with them on many matters. Page 130, we have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. Page 135, whether the family goes on a spiritual basis or not, the alcoholic member has to, if he could recover, the others must be convinced of his new status beyond the shadow of a doubt. Seeing is believing to most families who have lived with a drinker. Just a couple of more, you guys, but I was sort of surprised to see so many beautiful things. Page 158, he had begun to have a spiritual experience. Page 159, the way you fellows put this spiritual stuff makes sense. Page 567, in the back of the book, talking about spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Then I was looking through a little book here, some of the last major talks of Dr. Bob, and it's on page 18. You know, it doesn't make very much difference whether a person is drinking or whether they're sober as far as their ultimate aim is concerned. Whether they're drinking liquor or whether they're not, they're still after the same thing, and that's happiness, and we want peace of mind. The trouble is with us fellows that we thought we could... The trouble with us fellows was that we thought we could demand that the world give us happiness and peace of mind in such the particular way in which we wanted to get it, which happened to be by the alcohol route. And we weren't overly successful. But when we take time to find out and familiarize ourselves with and put into practice some of the spiritual laws it is necessary to follow to acquire those things, then we find that we get them. And that's been my experience, you guys. I have a lot of friends that follow different paths. I have friends that follow the Native American path, Buddhism, Catholicism, Hinduism, many different spiritual paths. And one of the things that I didn't really understand and really didn't like to hear in the beginning was contempt prior to investigation. I remember one time it was in Atlanta, and it was an annual speaker meeting, and it was at the Jewish synagogue. Well, I'd never been to one. And I was walking around, and they have these beautiful cases displaying very beautiful spiritual things. And I felt the presence of God so strong. And I, you know, wasn't familiar with the things and the cases. And these three elderly ladies, I'm sure they were in AA. And they came to me and spoke to me. And I said, I've never been in a Jewish synagogue. And they explained some of the things and the cases. And I said, it's so spiritual here. The presence of God is so strong. And they said, yes, it is. And they said, can we pray with you? A female friend of mine had been inviting me to Cherokee, North Carolina, to the Native American AA convention for the first couple of years of sobriety. But I'd started going to church at about 9 months sober, and I didn't go with her. And the reason that I didn't go was because I felt like that was in violation of things that I was learning in church. And finally, she just kept asking me if I would go. And finally, one day I went to that Native American convention. And I met brothers and sisters just like my friends here at the Howe Place. And I met Native Americans. And I began to learn of the Native American traditions of smudging and prayer and meditation and sweat lodges and how important Mother Earth and the Creator are. And I began to learn some of the teachings of the Native Americans. And the presence of God was there too. And we met some people that invited us to a camp out in Cherokee coming up the following spring. And we went to that camp out called Indians in Sobriety. And it's held at the KOA campground. And then there we met some other elders that invited us to another camp out called the Fireside Circle in Cherokee, North Carolina in May and in September every year. And they rent the Yogi Bear campground. All recovery programs are welcomed. Adult children of alcoholics, Al-Anon, NA, AA, all of the recovery programs are welcomed to this event. They do a powwow. They have a sacred fire that stays lit for 4 days straight. They have talking circles. They have speaker meetings. They bring newcomers that are in treatment centers to this event, and they serve and they cook food. And that's the only event that I attend twice a year now, but I've been attending this event. I believe this will be either the 7th or 8th year this year. And if anybody wants information or would like to get on my email list, just let me know and I'll email you the flyer. It's an amazing event. And my friend, she taught me how to dress as a woman. She taught me how to dress appropriately as a woman in the powwow. And a very dear friend, brother of ours in recovery who passed away with 26 years of sobriety last fall, he introduced me to the Red Road Path also. And he was glad to see that a mutual friend of ours had introduced me to the Red Road Path, because what I have discovered, how I went from contempt prior to investigation to a spiritual path, a Christian path, a path of learning from other spiritual paths that my friends follow, to the Red Road Path. What I have learned from the Native Americans is they have taught me how to recognize conscious contact in nature. And I've had a lot of experiences since then. You guys remember a brother in recovery, his name was Stumpy. And a few months before he died, I got together with a few friends, Claude and another friend of ours, and we decided to take a trip to the family cabin. And we went up to the cabin, and we decided to ride over to Cherokee one day. And Friday night, Stumpy said to me, I hope we see the elk in Cherokee tomorrow. And that night, I prayed a selfish prayer, asking that we see the elk, the herd of elk, when we were in Cherokee. And we were in Cherokee all day, and we didn't see the elk. And we stopped, and my friend said, turn right, and we were going to have lunch along the river. And she said, turn right, and we'll go to the picnic table there. And so we pulled into that area, and I said to her, hey, can we turn around and go to the picnic table in the other direction, about a half a mile down the road? And she said, yes. So we turned around, and we went to the picnic table in the other direction. And we pulled into that picnic table, and we had lunch along the river. And we said, oh, wow, I wish we would have seen the elk today. And we were getting ready to leave, and my three friends started walking to my truck, and I started walking to the trash can with our trash from our picnic. And what comes down off the mountain right to the picnic area that we're at was that herd of elk. And that herd of elk went walking past us, and the one male elk with antlers about 2 feet long. He stopped as all the other elks walked down the embankment and started crossing the river. He turned around and he looked at me, and Claude in the background said, "Joanna, be careful." The only thing that separated us, me from that male elk, was that long picnic table underneath the pavilion. And when he turned around and he stared at me, this is what the Creator said to me: "Through me, all things are possible." Now, does that mean that the elk was my Creator? No. But what it does mean to me is that the Creator heard my prayers, and the Creator knew that our friend would die a few months later. And He knew the impact that Stumpy had on hundreds of us in recovery, and the impact that seeing that herd of elk would have on all of us. Another experience that I had, I started Kennesaw State University. One of the first couple of times I was on campus, the Creator said to me, "Look." And I began looking around. He says, "Look." I began looking around. He says, "Look closely." Is it an audible voice? No. It's a language of the heart. And I began to look around closely. And I looked on the top of the three-story social sciences building. On the corner of that building was a red-tailed hawk. That red-tailed hawk turned and he looked down at me on the sidewalk. And then he took off flying. And when he flew, with about a 5-foot wingspan, it looked like, he flew right over me. And the Creator revealed to me at that moment, "You will soar." Now, does that mean I will soar in financial prosperity? No. Does that mean that I'll have a boyfriend or a husband in my life? No. That means that if I try to practice the principles of this program, not my program, this program, God's program, that if I try to be of service to other people, that if I make my amends, that I try to learn from my mistakes, that I try to the best of my ability to become a better person, that I will soar in life. And that when I cross over, and I will cross over one day, that I will be able to look back and not have the regrets and the shame that I had when I came in these rooms. That I'll be able to treat people fairly. That I'll be able to not regret my past. That I'll be able to be of service to another human being. Speaking of that, there was a gentleman from our home group, and I can speak of him because he passed away with 25 plus years of sobriety. His name was Ralph. He helped hundreds of us. Well, I would go by and see him at the rehab center every day after work. And one day I was tired and I wanted to go home, and I was going home. But guess what? My car turned in the direction of that rehab center. So I said, "Well, shoot, I'm halfway there now." Before I even realized, I was on my way to that rehab center behind Kennestone Hospital. And I was sitting there with him, and he started to cry. And he said, "Joanna, thank you for coming to see me every day." He said, "I know you're tired." He said, "But it means a lot to me that you come see me." And this is what whispered in my ear. And my sponsor speaks a lot about this. And that's our living amends. You know, I never hurt my grandmothers or stole from them or anything, but I didn't go visit them like I should have. I didn't spend time with them like I should have, because they died when I was in my early 20s and I was just getting started. And so what whispered in my ear was what my sponsor says, and that is, we can make a living amends today. If we have one's family members and loved ones and people in our lives that have crossed over, and we can't make that physical amends to them, I've done a couple of things. I've written a letter. I've gone to grave sites. But we also have senior citizens that are alive today, and they don't even have to be a family member. They're at these assisted living facilities and these 62 and older tax credit properties. They're in hospitals. They're everywhere. They're in our neighborhoods everywhere, that we can be of service and go rake their yard. We can take them some food. We, like my roommate does, we can go to Publix. She does this at 9:30 at night. She's been at work since 9 a.m. that morning. She goes to Publix, picks up tubs of bread and sweets and brings them here and brings them to senior citizen apartment complexes. We can do that, and by doing that, We're making a living amends today. We're making a difference today. Because there's nothing we can do about those years that are that have come and gone. But I will tell you from my own experience, and I'll talk about something very personal. You know, I made the choice to end a couple of pregnancies in my life. And God showed me something one time a couple of years ago when they were talking about it on the Fish Christian radio station. And they were raising money for a children's charity. And God spoke to my heart. And he said, you need to make a donation. I said, no. I'm driving to work. You need to make a donation. No. About two or three times. I'm not proud to admit this. You know, and I didn't do it that day. Well, the Fish was doing it again the next day, you know, on the way to work. And so I said, all right, God, I'll make the donation. Hey, you know what he said? He says, I know how much money you have in the bank. You just checked it last night. You're getting paid Friday. You need to make a donation. And I made that donation to a children's charity, to a children's charity that provides fresh water for these girls and boys to be able to go to a spiritual school in third world countries and get an education to have fresh water for their family. When I made that donation on the phone on the way to work, I started crying uncontrollably, and the power of the Creator came into my body, and he told me, you're forgiven. You can't do anything about those decisions you made earlier in your life. But you can make a difference in the lives of children today. There's a lot of children. You know, we've got men in this fellowship that are going to high schools, and people in recovery nowadays going to high schools now. Young people speaking to these young kids, telling them how it started. It started in high school for us. For me, it did. Telling them, hey, it started out by just smoking a joint. And then it led to taking a pill. And then it led to, you know, whatever it leads to. We've got people in this room right now that are going to jails, that are going to juvenile halls. That's how we make a difference. We make a difference by being a voice. Being a voice, there are people within the recovery community that speak to the government, you know, that are involved in that channel. It would never have been classified as a disease if people would not have spoken up about that. And there's movies on that also, and I was quite fascinated with that. There's a lot of controversy involved with that, and I've spoken with people, and a lot of people have different opinions about that. But we do have a voice, and not just with recovery. We have a voice in a lot of things. We have a voice like the Native Americans are teaching me. You guys, we've got future generations, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. They need fresh water. It's our responsibility to recycle. It's our responsibility to conserve water. It's our responsibility to not litter our cigarette butts if you smoke. It's our responsibility. It's our responsibility to write to our congresspeople, to do our research and find out what legislators, what lobbying groups are out there that are actually trying to make a difference for our environment, trying to make a difference for children, trying to provide futures for future generations. You know, there's a property management company. Actually, they own the communities. I won't mention their names, but they do a lot for people. They are only building, I found out this week, they are only building tax credit senior citizen properties now. And they provide manicures and pedicures for the senior citizens that live there every month. They provide books for the children that live in their properties that have children. They provide a book, a motivational spiritual book club for all of the people that live there. When I go by there, they're joining, do you want a book? And they're a Christian-owned company. But you see, those kind of companies are making a difference. They're providing for the future generations, the children of this world, that are going to be the future leaders of our country and of our world. And they provide for the senior citizens who have already built this country to be what it is today. And I learned these things in college, y'all, because I didn't know this stuff. This is the stuff I learned taking environmental science, taking American government, taking the courses that I dropped out of high school before I took. And today, all of this has been possible because of this design for living. I don't have to look myself in a mirror today and call myself the bad names that I used to call myself, because I'm not doing that. Now, I could go back to doing some of those things, and I probably wouldn't feel real good about myself as a woman, but I don't. I try to carry myself as a respectable, sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I fall short of God's glory every day. But I'm so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful to have a design for living. And I'm so grateful that you people loved me until I could love myself. Because when I came in here, and y'all remember, I was a mess. And you ask my two roommates, I have two roommates in recovery. I can be a mess today, especially with everything going on with my job today. But you know what? I was at a national sales conference last week, and the people on the division that I used to work on for over 3 years, they said to me, "Thank you, Joanna." And I said, "Thank you for what?" They said, "Thank you for standing up for what's right, because what you stood for, the changes have been made now." So would I recommend it when it comes to your employer? I wouldn't. I honestly wouldn't. But today, I try to make a difference, and I try to follow, to the best of my ability, the spiritual principles. And I truly believe that I was created not to be the woman that I came in here as. I truly believe that I was created to be happy, joyous, and free, like it talks about, and all the promises in the big book. I believe all of us were created to be that. And things happen in our lives. You know, I was raped when I was 15. And that's when I started using shortly thereafter. My parents divorced when I was in the summer of third grade. My first love was killed in a tragic car accident when I was 25. But when I came in here, I was 42. Am I going to continue to use those as excuses for my actions today? Or am I going to accept responsibility for the choices that I make today? And if I accept those responsibilities, then I'll begin to change. And it doesn't mean beating myself up. We've been beating ourselves up enough. It just means saying, "Hey, this is what I did," you know, in our fourth and fifth step with another human being. "This is what I did." And they're going to be like, "Oh, wow, man, you did that? Let me tell you a little bit about what I did." And you'll be like, "Damn, golly, I thought I was bad. You really need to be here," you know. That was what my sponsor did. You know, it was really cool. And even my second sponsor, who's my sponsor today, I was like, "Whoa," you know. And they do that so that we feel comfortable enough to tell them those few things that we left out on that list. Or, as time goes on, heck, we forgot. I forgot about a decade of my life, you guys. The 80s, forget it, man. It's forgotten. You know, and God reveals it to me every day. He puts people in my path that share things, and I'm like, "Oh, wow, man, I owe an amends for that." Or I did that too, and I had totally forgotten about it. But, you know, we have a way out. And it's right here. Are we going to do it perfect? I haven't done it perfect. I've had anger, resentment, fear. All those things haven't been removed from me. But they're a lot less than they used to be. A lot less. And I have tools, and I have people, really close people in my network, that I can talk about those things. And I can try to do better the next time, and I can try to become a better person and move forward. I don't want to go down. I spent from 15 to 42 living that life. It didn't work. But this life, you know, in 10 years, I hadn't been arrested. I haven't done more immoral things that I don't remember the next day. And I'm just so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful for this meeting. I want to thank Karen, and I want to thank Chris for their volunteerism, and Damon for their volunteerism in doing what they do to support this meeting. Because when I've been unemployed, I can't come Monday through Friday, but when I've been unemployed, if this meeting wouldn't have been here, I probably wouldn't be sober today, because I had to start my day off with a meeting, and I had to end my day with a meeting in times of unemployment so that the financial insecurity fear would not consume me. But I'm so grateful to be sober today, and I'm so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful to the Creator, the Spirit of the universe that underlies the totality of all things. And I'm just so grateful for not having contempt prior to investigation. So, you know, my friend or girlfriend of mine, she goes to see the Tibetan monks, and that's on my bucket list. I want to go see them. you know. My older brother, he follows the teachings of Sai Baba. And one day I'm going to go to India with him. And there are things that are possible for me today if I have an open mind and I'm willing. But if I drink, all bets are off. If I drink, they're off for me. Because I'm either going to be dead, arrested, or I'm going to kill an innocent person behind the wheel of an automobile. So God bless you all, and thank you so much for the gift of recovery.